Boker Tov, and now we continue on with our discussion of the Mishnah at the beginning of the third parak. At the end of the first half of the Mishnah, we are now on Daf Yod Zayin Amud Bet. At the end of the first half of the Mishnah that listed all of the exceptions to the rule about shaving and Chol HaMoed, we mentioned V'hanazir V'hametzora Mitum Atola Taharato. So this is, of course, unique to shaving and doesn't apply to laundry. A Nazir who finishes his Nazirut and a Metzorah who becomes pure during Chol HaMoed may shave as part of the process. So, Ba'amin Rabbi Yirmiya and Rabbi Zeira. So, yeah, Rabbi Yirmiya asked Rabbi Zeira, B'shalohi Alahem Pnai, is this talking only about a case where they did not have any time Erev Yom Tov to shave? Odilma Af Shayalem Pnai, or are our exceptions include, and this is something we mentioned a few days ago when studying the Mishnah, does it include even a case where they did have some opportunity? For instance, if somebody arrived on a trip in the afternoon of Erev Yom Tov, so technically they had time to shave, but of course they had many other things to do, or does it only have to be a situation where they arrived at the very last minute or on Yom Tov itself? So we have a braita that says that the entire list of exceptions is only if they did not have an opportunity. But if they did have an opportunity and they didn't take advantage of it, they're not allowed to shave on Chol HaMoed like everyone else. However, our two, Nazir and Mitzorah, even if they did have an opportunity, meaning the Nazir's 30th day ended up on Erev Yom Tov, nonetheless, they're allowed to shave on Chol HaMoed, because we do not want them to delay bringing their korban for too long. And so this way, they will shave and immediately bring the korban and then move on. Tana. Now we have a braita that adds in two other members to our list that were not in our Mishnah, and that is HaKohen v'HaAvel Mutarim Megiluach. Somebody who is a Kohen, and we'll see in a minute what the circumstance is, but it's remember that a Kohen is not allowed to shave during his Mishmeret, during his week. And so it's going to relate to that. And an Avel, of course, is not allowed to shave. So the notion is that an Avel who ends his Avelut running right into the Yom Tov can shave on Chol HaMoed. We'll see how this plays out. Hi Avel, and of course it's going to be a situation where the Braita disagrees with the Mishnah. We have to find the point of disagreement. Hi Avel Echidami, what's the case of the Avel? Ilei Meshachal Shmini Shelo Be'erev HaRegel. If you think it's an Avel who finished his 7 days of the first stage of mourning, a day before Erev HaRegel, so the 8th day is Erev HaRegel, a Boilei LeGiluch Erev HaRegel, then he should have shaved because after all he's done with Shiva, now he should have shaved on the 8th day, which is Erev Yom Tov, and he didn't take advantage of it, so why would he be allowed to shave on Chol HaMoed? Ela Shechal Shmini Shel Aliyot B'Shabbat Erev HaRegel. It must be that Yom Tov started on a Sunday, and his 8th day ended up on Shabbat, right? And now we're going to see a discussion that we're going to get to later on in the parak about the nature of the last day. He still should have shaved on Friday. Why? We rule like Abba Shaul, who says, Miktzat Yom Kehulo, that on the last day of any period of Avilut, whether it's Shiva or Shloshim, we'll see if it applies to both Shiva or Shloshim, Abba Shaul says that any part of the day is considered the full day. So, for in our case, at the on the seventh day, even the first hour of the seventh day, that's already sufficient, and he can already shave. But Chacham even accept Abba Shaul's position. Chacham, who generally say you need the full day to complete the full day, agree that if Erev HaRegel is on Shabbat, meaning Yom Tov starts on Sunday, and the eighth day falls out on Shabbat, then that nonetheless he can shave during the day of the seventh day, which is Friday. So therefore, who would then argue that an Avel can did not have the opportunity beforehand? So here's what happened. He buried somebody on a Sunday, and Yom Tov starts the next Sunday, which means that his seventh day is on Shabbat. Which means he could not shave on Friday because it was not the, he had not finished 7 days. Yom Tov didn't start yet. So there's a machloket where our Tana holds that such a person may shave on Chol HaMoed, and the Mishnah says that not. So what's the machloket? Tana brasa v'lak Abba Shaul. Our Tana, the Tana of the Braita, holds like Abba Shaul. What does Abba Shaul say? Mitzat Yom Kehulo. which means since the seventh day was on Shabbat, and the minute that the sun came up on Shabbat, there was an hour, technically he was already out of Avilut. But of course, he can't shave on Shabbat, so he's a classic case of onus. Abba Shaul says that the seventh day counts already for the completion of the seventh day and already the first day of the next period of Shloshim. Came into Shabbat, and since the seventh day turned out to be Shabbat, and he couldn't shave that day, he's nenas. Tana Yidan Sabah like a Rabbanan, and our Tana holds like Rabbanan, who disagree with Abba Shaul and say, we do not accept Mikzat Yom Kechulo. Which means that when the regel started, meaning on Shabbat, when the Erev HaRegel, he had not yet completed his 7 days of Avilut. And that being the case, it's not that he was ne'anas before the regel and couldn't shave, but rather that he was not somebody who was allowed to shave at all, as opposed to somebody who's on a trip or something like that. Good. Now, that's the case of the Ovel. That's why our Mishnah doesn't list it, and that's why the Braita does. Now, hi, Kohen Echadami. Well, the second item, the second person listed in the Braita was a Kohen. What's the case of the Kohen? Eilev and Ashol Mishmarto of Haregel, that his Mishmeret, his week of Avodah, ended up on Erev Yontif, Sevali Galuchai of Haregel. Then that means that on that day, the Erev Yontif, which is no longer his Mishmeret, he's allowed to shave, he should have shaved. Didn't shave, he lost his chance. Aha, must be a case where his mishmeret ended up on Yontif. So Tani Dan Savar, our Tana holds, Kevan dit non mishlosha prakim mishana, you call mishmerot shavot, peimu re regalim chiluk lechem upon him. There are 3 times a year that all mishmerot are equal, meaning any mishmeret, whether you've ended, any kohen can really come to Yerushalayim and participate fully. And they can participate fully in the emurim, and bring the stuff up to the Mizbeach, and eating the Lechem HaPanim, command lo shal mishmerato b'regel dami, and therefore, it's a case as if his mishmeret didn't yet finish, which means it's not that he was ne'anas and couldn't shave, he was really wasn't allowed to shave. But Tana barasa rafagam v'shayach v'hanach mishmerot, even though he has a chelek there, mishmerate b'yashli mele, but his mishmeret is done, and therefore, he really could have shaved on Erev, he really could have shaved when the regal started, but he was nenas, because you're not allowed to shave on Yontif, and therefore he's allowed to do on Chol HaMoed. Good. Tana Rabbanan. Kol elu she'amru mutarin legaleach b'moed, mutarin legaleach b'mei avlan. This is a statement we saw at the beginning of the parak, which the way Breita said, that everyone who is allowed to shave Chol HaMoed is also allowed to shave during their Avelut. Ay v'atanya asurim, we have a bright that says the exact opposite, that just because you're allowed to shave on Chol HaMoed does not mean you're allowed to shave as an Avel. So let's see what the circumstance is. Meaning, somebody just got off of a long trip and finds out that he's an Avel, nonetheless he's allowed to shave, or somebody got out of prison, etc. Now, Amar Chistab Rav Shila, kitanya hacha mutarin kshetakfu avelav. So when do we say that you're allowed to, when you have the circumstances of our Mishnah, getting off from a long trip or out of prison? That you're, and in that case, you then are met by Avilut, you're still allowed to shave. That's when you have a double or triple Avilut, one after another. Lo aleinu, somebody dies, and then 5 days later, another relative dies. Right, and something that we saw earlier on. If the guy has a string of Avilut, then you don't need the excuses of our Mishnah of a trip or a prison. Anybody who has a series of Avilut, one after the other, is allowed to shave. The Tanya of a bright that says, if your hair got too long, you're allowed to cut it. And you're allowed to wash your clothes. So you see that if somebody has a series of Aviluyot, even without having been in prison or been on trip or whatever it may be, is still allowed, or been a menuda or had a neder, that got lifted during Chol HaMoed, he's still allowed to shave and to his laundry. Ah, but it's not exactly the same. Rav Chista read the statement very carefully and said, you're allowed to use a blade, but not scissors. Aha. But you're allowed to use water, you're not allowed to use any sort of detergent. So in other words, in a normal case of Tkafu Avilav, when you have one Avilut after another, and it's now been a few weeks and you haven't been able to shave or anything, so you're allowed to shave in a rudimentary fashion and wash your clothes in a rudimentary fashion. When you throw into the mix the ones mentioned in our Mishnah of prison, a trip, etc., then you're allowed to shave and to launder in a normal fashion. And parenthetically, Rav Chisda said, you see from here that an avel is not allowed to do laundry, because that's what we said, that he can cut his hair and he can wash his clothes in this rudimentary fashion if he has several aveliyot together. There's another proof in the discussion we saw a couple days ago that an avel is not allowed to do laundry. Good. Tan Rabbanan, k'shem shamru asur legalech b'moed, kach asur litol tziponayim b'moed. Good. Devar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that that's just as you're not allowed to cut your hair, you're also not allowed to cut your nails on Chol HaMoed. Rabbi Yossi doesn't equate the two, and he says they're mutar. K'shem shamru avel asur legalech me'evlo, and similarly, the same machloket applies, just like we said, you're not allowed to shave during avilut. Similarly, you're not allowed to cut your fingernails during Avilut. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi Matir. Again, same machloket. Amar Ula. So now Ula says, Halocha Rabbi Yehuda be'evel. In other words, they were machmer in Avilut. Valocha Rabbi Yossi ba'moed. It's kind of an interesting position. In a Chol HaMoed, where the Isur may be da'oraita, we're lenient and allow you to cut your fingernails. But during Avilut, where it's certainly drabanan, we rule like Rabbi Yehuda, l'chumra. The position may be, though, that after all, in Chol HaMoed, you have to look nice. You have to look nice for the regel, as opposed to Avilut, where there is no such consideration. Shmuel Amar, this is the definitive word, Alocha Rabbi Yossi Moed Avu Alvel. We pass on Rabbi Yossi in both cases, because Damar Shmuel Alocha Kedira Hamekel Be'evel, that the rule always follows that Shmuel's very important rule about Avilut, which we're going to see several times through the rest of the parak, is that whenever there is a dispute and there's a lenient and a stringent position in Avilut, we always rule like the lenient position. That's in Avilut, not in things that may be associated with Avilut, such as Kriya, as we'll see later on. Now we hear a story, and it's quite a frightening story. Pinchas Achua Demar Shmuel. Pinchas was Shmuel's brother. Itra Be'milta. He was an Avel. Something happened to him. He became an Avel. Son died, whatever. It can't be that his father died. It can't be that his brother died, because then Shmuel would also be an Avel. Al Shmuel Amishal Tamimine. So Shmuel went to comfort him. Chazanu Latufer Dahavinafishan. He saw that his brother's fingernails were long. Amarle Amailo Shakalt Lahu. So he said to his brother, why didn't you tell you cut your fingernails? And Shmuel had ruled like Rabbi Yossi, and therefore you can cut your fingernails as an avel. So he said, why didn't you cut your fingernails? Amarle Iba Didehave Mimizalzelta Bekulehai. And so Pinchas turned to his brother Shmuel and said, if you were the avel, you wouldn't be so light about it. In other words, he was saying, yeah, maybe technically I'm allowed to cut my nails, but I feel this sadness so strongly that I'm not willing to cut my nails. And you know what? If you were the Avel, you wouldn't be so quick to say that. So Havi Kishkagashi Otsam Lifnei HaShalit. It's like a Freudian slip, a statement that came out, right? And as if he said, if you were the Avel, and what happened as a result? V'itro b'milta b'shmuel. And the next thing you knew, Shmuel was an Avel. Because that's what his brother said. Right, if you were an Avel, you wouldn't be so quick. Oh, he became an Avel. So now his brother, who had been the Avel, came to visit Shmuel, who is now an Avel. So you know what Shmuel did? Just to show him that even though he was the Avel now, he nonetheless held his position, he cut off his own fingernails and he threw them right in the face of his brother. Amarle, and then he said to him, castigating him, Don't you know how to keep your mouth shut? In other words, don't you understand that there's a brit, a covenant, that when you say something, you may be affecting something in the world? How do we know this principle? Shenemar, when Avraham goes up to the Akedah with Yitzchak, Avraham supposedly knows that he's going to be coming down alone, and yet he's keeping that from the other boys. What does he say to them? V'yomar Avraham el na'arav, shvula champoy machamor, you stay here with the donkey. And I and the boy, and Yitzchak, will go up to there, and we will prostrate ourselves, and we will come back. Right? So Avraham, instead of saying, I will come back, said, we will come back. And guess what? They both were able to come back. So you see, when you say something, you may affect, you change things in the world. So that was what Shmuel was trying to make the point to his brother. You should be more careful the way you speak. Shouldn't have turned around and said to me, if you were an avel, because the next thing that happened was I became an avel. Sofer minei diyad in deregelo. So our assumption about this entire discussion of fingernails was that it only fingernails and not toenails. Because fingernails are something that everybody sees, and you have to look nice. Toenails, they could grow a little long. I have a tradition, I heard it directly from Shmuel, Loshna de Yad, Loshna de Regel. Both finger and toenails can be cut on Chol HaMoed and as an Avel. Asur. But to use a very special kind of a nail cutter, that you're not allowed to use, but rather regular scissors or something else, but not the very special kli for that. She tells us a story. I was sitting in front of Rabbi Yochanan on Chol HaMoed in the Beis Medrash. And what he did is he tore his own, his fingernails were very long, he tore them with his teeth, and he threw them right in the Beis Medrash. So we can learn three things from this. The first thing is, you see, you're allowed to cut your fingernails on Chol HaMoed. Rabbi Yochanan did it. The second thing is, this is not considered to be a disgusting thing. In other words, it's not considered to be socially unacceptable. And we see something else, that you're allowed to throw your fingernails on the ground. Now, this will be challenged. There's three categories of how people deal with tzipornayim, with fingernails. Hakovran, tzaddik, somebody who buries them, is a tzaddik. Sorfan chassid, somebody who burns them, is a chassid, even more righteous. What's the reason? Because evidently they understood that there was some demonic possession or some mystical negative attributes and negative energy that came from your torn off fingernails. And so a righteous person didn't want anyone to get hurt by it, so that he would dispose of it. Zorkan rasha, somebody who throws them neglectfully on the ground, is a rasha. So how could Rabbi Yochanan do this? So Tom am I, so what's the answer? The reason that it's a concern is Shema Tavarla Isha Ubarava Tapil. The concern was that a pregnant woman will walk over these fingernails and it'll cause her to miscarry. That's what they believed. Isha be midrash aloshchicha, and therefore, since there were no women in the Beit Midrash, Rabbi Yochanan had no concern with throwing the fingernails. In other words, he understood the issue of throwing the fingernails is because of a pregnant woman. There are no pregnant women here, so I'll throw the fingernails. Good. But wait a second, they're going to sweep them out onto the street. The answer is, and this is a world that we don't have any access to, a world of a certain level of mysticism, is once they've been moved from the first place that they fell, then they don't have any more power, any more demonic power. So only where the fingernails first fell is the problem. So therefore, if you're in a place where women are regularly walking, or a woman may walk when she's pregnant, you have to be careful not to cut them and throw them on the ground. But if on the other hand, you're in a place where women don't come, like in the Beit Midrash, at least in those days, then it was not a problem. Amrav Yehuda Marav, Zug Bami Chamatan Lifnei Rebbe. There was a pair of students came from Chamatan. Mazutra Matni, or Zutra taught it as a Braita, not a statement of Rav. Zug Bami Chamatan Lifnei Rebbe. Same story. They came and asked him, are you allowed to cut your fingernails? And they were asking here about Avelut. Right, they were asking whether or not they could cut their fingernails as avilim. Right, and actually, what they were asking him was also whether that. Right, as avilim, are they allowed to cut their fingernails? And he said, Mutar. And had they gone a little further and said, could we cut our mustache, trim our mustache, he told them he would have been Matar also. Shmuel's version of the story is that they went further and asked him, could we still cut a mustache, and he allowed it. Ravito Safra, Mishmeidra Papa. Vito Safra is somebody you don't hear of too much. So Safami Zavit Lazavit. It means from one corner of the mouth to the other. I'm Raviami with Safam Akevit. But that's only if it's a mustache that gets in the way of eating. My mustache is always a safa makeva. It's always getting in the way. And therefore, it's mutter to cut for even as an avil. So now that we mention Avito Safra, we'll mention another tradition in this name. Paro Sheb Me Moshe, the Paro of Moshe's time. Who Amah, he was only one Amah tall. Uz Kano Amah, his beard was an Amah long. From Ashtako Amah Vizaret. Right? And his organ was even a little longer than that. And there's the pasuk from Daniel. He's going to raise very low people above them. In other words, now Mitzrayim was subjugated to a very low person. Now, Vito Safar Mishreiner Papa Paro Shaev Me Moshe Amgushi Haya. Another statement that Paro was a magician. Magushi is related to the word magus, which from where magic comes from. It's a Persian word, but it means a magician. That when Moshe was told to go tell Pharaoh and warn him about the plagues, he was told to go greet him in the morning at the water. So one of the explanations of that, take a look at the Rishonim there, in Parag Zion and Sefer Shemot, you'll see that there's a range of approaches to understanding it. One of the approaches taken, which Rashi quotes, is that Paro tried to present himself as being some sort of a demigod and never went to the bathroom. So he'd sneak out to the water early in the morning to take care of his needs, and that's where Moshe would find him, thus embarrassing him even further. Another explanation of this, which is not the way that Rashi goes in the Chumash, is that Paro would go out to the water to do various forms of witchcraft. Right? The second half of our Mishnah, and we're going to see the discussion on this is, as you can see, very brief. The following are allowed to do laundry on Chol HaMoed. Habam dinatayam, etc. Rasam Yochanan, Misha Eino Ela Chaluk Echad. We've already seen this. Somebody who only has one garment. Mutar lechabso b'chul shemoed. You're allowed to laundry. Rabbi Yirmiyah, Eino Mechabsin Moed, Habam dinatayam, b'chulei. Rabbi Yirmiyah challenged it. We have a Mishnah, lists a bunch of people, and doesn't list among them somebody who has one garment. Hani, Misha Eino Chaluk Echad, lo. It's only these people, not somebody who has only one garment. So Yaakov, Rabbi Yirmiyah. So Rabbi Yaakov defended the position as follows. Aspar Alach, I'll explain it to you. Our mission is afagav de ilay trei matanfi. Even if the person has two or more garments and they got dirty, then only with these exceptions is he allowed to wash them in these circumstances. And what we're saying is, but if you have only one garment, then under all circumstances, doesn't matter if you're in captivity, doesn't matter if you had a chance before Yantav to wash it. If only one, you can wash it. So Yitzchak bar Yaakov bar Yor mishmei de Rabbi Yochanan. So he made the following observation. Linen clothes are allowed to be washed. So maybe Rava challenged that. Mitpachot ha'edayim, mitpachot ha'safarim. Right? We have a list of particular items that are allowed to be washed in the Mishnah, and it doesn't list all linen clothes. It lists certain kinds of towels. Hani'in klei pishtan lo. So Amalei Abai, manitin afilu sharmini. So Abai says a similar answer to what Yaakov gave just before, is that our Mishnah is referring to any sort of fabric. If it's used as a towel or a hand towel, etc. But any linen clothes can be rewashed. Amar Abar Hedya Lidi Chazi Liyama Shel Tiberia. I myself saw in Tiberia at the sea. The Mapkila Mishichle Demane Kitna Bechula Demoada. Right, I saw that they were taking out baskets of clay pishtan to wash them on Chol HaMoed. So what does that prove? Just the fact that you saw people going down to the Kinneret to wash their linen clothes on Chol HaMoed, that doesn't mean the Chachamim approved of it. Maybe they were going against the Chachamim. Maybe they were doing it in spite of the Chachamim, and maybe it was wrong. So you don't, and that doesn't prove that the statement that the Klei Pishtan are Mutar is really accepted. Good. The next Mishnah, which is a long list, and there's only one item on the list that we're going to discuss at all. Ve'ilu kodvin b'moed. This is Mishnah Gimel, and there's a prohibition against professional writing on Chol HaMoed. Good. However, there are exceptions. Who are they? Kiddushei Nashim, to write a shtar erusin, a shtar of Kiddushin between a man and a woman, betrothal. The Gitin, a get, Shovarin, which are receipts for loans, Daitiki, which is a certain kind of a gifting writ, Matana, which is another kind of gifting writ, Pruzbul, and a Pruzbul, the famous document which you hand over a collection of your loans to the Beit Din. So Shemitah doesn't cancel them. Igrot Shum, this is if the Beit Din estimates the value of somebody's property for purposes of a lien, etc. And they write that down. Igrot Mazon, if a widow comes to the Beit Din and says that, you know, the estate isn't paying her regular food stipend. Shitre Chalitza, if a woman got Chalitza, a levirate marriage was canceled by Chalitza, she has to have a shtar that indicates she's a free woman. Meunim is if we'll deal with this a lot in Masechet Yevamot very soon. If a girl under the age of 12, needs to be married off for whatever reason or another, because socially not being married is very unprotected, is very vulnerable, etc., and her father is not alive. Then her mother or brothers can marry her off, but it's Kiddushin Drabanan. And when she reaches age, if she's not interested in staying with her husband, she can walk out. That's called miyun. But she needs a shtar to indicate that she's a mema'enet. Shitre viruin. Now, on the page, I wrote it as zabla. Zabla is a din in the third paragraph of Sanhedrin, that if the two litigants are going against each other, each one can choose a dayan, and the two dayanim together choose a third dayan. Zeb borel achad, vein borin. So that the shtar that indicates who they've chosen can be written. Zerot beitin, if the beitin makes an enactment. Vigrot shavashut are just letters that you can write. In other words, so it's non-professional. So anything that's a particular need that cannot wait till after Chol HaMoed, or something that is really non-professional can be written. The only item we're going to deal with in the Gemara is the issue of Kiddushin. Amar Shmuel mutar la'reisi shah b'chol ha'shamod. Shmuel says, you're allowed to get betrothed on Chol HaMoed, even though you're not allowed to get married, as we saw in the first parak. Shemikad menu acher, because what's the concern? The concern is that if you don't betroth this girl today, somebody else will come along. That's why you're allowed even to get betrothed on Tisha B'Av. Perhaps he has support from our Mishnah. Elu kofim moed kiddushin nashim. Right, the first item on our list is kiddushin. Mylov shitre kiddushin mamish. Is it not the way I presented in the Mishnah? Shtar kiddushin. You know, it says harayat mu'asat the bishtar zeh. So lo shitre psikta. No, you know what it is? What we kind of refers to as tnoim. There's an agreement between the two sides of what each parent, each set of parents is going to provide for their newlywed children. Rav Gidol Amarav, Rav Gidol Amarav, famous statement of Rav, Kama atano ten levincha, kach vekach, how much are you going to give to your son to marry my daughter? This much. Kama atano ten levitcha, and how much are you giving your daughter to come marry my son? Kach vekach, amdu vekitshu, and then they immediately have kiddushin, kana, right, kanu. Then the kinyan, the agreement that they just made, becomes valid by virtue of the kiddushin. These are things for which you don't necessarily need a shtar, but the amounts are written down in a shtar that can be written on Chol HaMoed. Good. Perhaps that is supported by the Mishnah in the first parak that says you're not allowed to get married or do yibum because it's a simcha. You know, arvin simcha b'simcha. But what's not listed there? Hala ares shari. So what's left out is erusin, is betrothal. Betrothal is mutter. So for the fact that betrothal is not mentioned in the Mishnah, and we all assume betrothal would be less of an issue on Chol HaMoed because it's not as big of a simcha, that it's mutar. So no, not necessarily. Lo mi baya kamar. Perhaps it's the opposite. Lo mi baya la arayish lo kavin mitzvah. It's certainly the case in this way of thinking that I cannot be betrothed because there's no mitzvah that I'm accomplishing. Aval elafidli san nami to kavin mitzvah. But even getting married, which is a mitzvah, usur, aha. But so, in other words, I still don't have proof for Shmuel's position that you're allowed to get betrothed on Chol HaMoed. Perhaps the Mishnah that says you can't get married is saying you can't even get married. And certainly you can't get betrothed. So, toshma d'tanarei Shmuel marasin v'lomi v'lo konsin. We have a brita taught in Shmuel's Beit Midrash, which says you can get betrothed but not married. V'ein osin su'udat erusin. You don't make the big party of the erusin of betrothal. Therefore, you can infer correctly that there is no prohibition of erusin itself on Chol HaMoed, but the big party has to wait till afterwards. Now, remember Shmuel's argument that you can get betrothed on Chol HaMoed is a precaution against someone else beating you to the punch and betrothing that beautiful girl. The Amar of Yudom or Shmuel, since when did Shmuel hold the position that anybody could beat you to her? Shmuel himself was the one who said that every day there's a voice from heaven, perhaps when a child is born, when it says, this girl's going to marry that guy. This field's going to end up with that person. In other words, all of these things are destiny, and so therefore nobody could beat you to the punch. If it's a girl you're not supposed to get, you won't get her, and if it's you're supposed to get her, nobody will beat you to her. What does it mean? It means that really it's somebody you should marry, but maybe somebody else will really take a fancy to her and he'll daven with tremendous power, and maybe he'll then be able to beat you. And we have a story like this. Rava heard a guy davening very, very hard and saying, "She's davening planita, I really want to marry this girl." Rava said, "You shouldn't daven like that. If she's the right girl for you, she won't leave you." V'lo kafarta b'Hashem. If not, then you're rejecting God. God made a set you up, and you're rejecting and asking for something different. So batar hachi shmai deka amar, and evidently the guy didn't listen, and he ended up marrying her. And later on, he heard, oh, iu limut mikama, oh, iu tamut mikame. Let her die or me die. And the guy could not stand his marriage. Amar le aminelach lo tibay ala demelta. Didn't I tell you not to pray for that? Right. Hachi amarav mishum Rabbi Reuven ben Yisrubel min haTorah min avim min maktuvim min Hashem mishal yish. And he taught him, he said, we have a statement of the Reuven ben Yisrubel, who we do not hear much about. He says, I can show you in each part of the Tanakh that the woman that you marry is destined from God. Min haTorah, how do I see it in the Torah? Dichtiv, ayam avanav tuav ayamu mi Adonai yatzar davar. That after the Avraham's servant comes and finds Rivka for Yitzchak and tells them the whole story, they said, oh, this is what God has decreed. What can we do? This is a Shimshon's parents who were complaining that he was going to marry this girl, this Plishti girl, didn't know that this was God's plan because actually he was trying to get Shimshon to get mixed up with the Plishti and start a fight with them. And of course, there's very few ways better than that than to marry into the family. Of course, this is very strange because it means that even somebody marrying out, this is a decree from God. Very difficult. Mina k'tuvim, how do we know it from the k'tuvim in Mishlei? D'chtiv bayit v'hon nachalat avot me'adonai isha maskelet. So wealth and property, that is an inheritance that you get from your ancestors. But the it is from God that you get an intelligent wife. Good. So once we mentioned already Rav's quotes from this Reuven ben Yisrubli, we have another one. It might be a brayta. I'm Rabbi Reuven ben Yisrubli. Ein adam nechshav davar elim kein osao. A person is never suspected of something unless he really did it. Now that's a little difficult, and that means that there really is never need for a procedure because the minute that there is a person is accused of something, we're going to claim he did it. So we have to soften this quite a bit. If he didn't really do the whole thing that he's accused of, he did part of it. If he didn't really do part of it, at least he was thinking about doing it. If he wasn't thinking about doing it, he saw other people doing it, he thought, and he liked it, he thought it was a good idea. In other words, it's not somebody who's totally divorced from this. It's somebody who, in one sense, either because of his own actions or his own obsessions or his own attitude, something, really feels a kinship to that particular act, whatever it may be. Meitiv Rabbi Yaakov. So Rabbi Yaakov challenged this by saying, this is in Malachim Bet, when the text is summarizing why the northern kingdom was destroyed and they ended up getting exiled. They claimed things about God that weren't true at all. So you see that they suspected God about something that wasn't true. Right, so the one easy answer you could say is that's God. But hatam lachisu da'avud. The answer is they weren't doing it because they really suspected it. They were doing it just to anger God. The pasuk until him says that they were jealous of Moshe. And what's the limud? Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchak amar melamed shekol echad kinei l'ishto mimoshe. That everyone in the camp did the process of kinui, which is a formal warning in the situation of a suspected adulteress against her being with the man that he suspects she's having the affair with. And everyone in the camp did that with his wife relative to Moshe. Now, nobody in his right mind thinks that Moshe is guilty of that. Right? So why would we think that, so he must be that some of that was actually there. Moshe did part of it. Moshe did thought about it. Not possible. Right, so how do we answer? The answer is they all were very angry at Moshe. They hated Moshe because they were jealous of him, and therefore, therefore he was always the bearer of bad tidings of the decrees, and therefore that's why they did this kinui, not because they really believed Moshe had anything to do in any inappropriate way, but that was their way of getting back at him. Toshma Amar Biyosi Heichalkin Mishachoshdino Tobe Davar VeEinbo. Rabbi Yossi said, I always want to be included among those people who are suspected of something which is untrue. Because the pain and affliction involved in having to deal with people's suspicions is a kapara. Now, Papa and Papa said, you know what? I've been suspected of things that weren't at all true about me. So we call it a pasik. So the answer, the way we reconcile all of this is, if it is a rumor that doesn't persist, so then that's good. For a little while you suffer and it goes away and everybody understands it wasn't true. But if it's a rumor that persists, call it a lapasik, then it must be that there's something true about it. But call it a lapasik ad kama. So how long does it have to go for it to be recognized as a rumor that doesn't stop? By Amrali Aim, so Abaye's nanny told him, Dume demata yoma upalga. Right? People in the city, they talk about something for a day and a half. After that, they move on to new business. And immediately go pasak baini baini. But that's, of course, if during that day and a half, there was no break. Pasak baini baini late on Bob. But if in the middle of that day and a half, they started talking about something else, and it was forgotten, and they picked it up again, then it also means nothing. You know, it's only if there's a really persistent rumor that for more than a day and a half, people are just talking about nonstop, and that's it, then you got to suspect that there's something real there. Chipasak baini baini, and even if there's a break, well, man ella dula pasak machmat yira. But that break has to be an organic break, meaning people just stopped talking about it because they lost interest or they didn't feel it was so strong. If, on the other hand, they stopped talking about it because the guy himself was walking past and they all stopped, or because his friend, who was the magistrate, walked past and they stopped, that doesn't count as stopping. And by the way, this is all true if the rumor doesn't pop up again. If it pops up again, lo, then it may be real substantial. By the way, none of this is true if you have real embittered enemies. If you have enemies, then it's the enemies who have started this rumor, and then there's no reason to suspect it. Which means, bottom line, the only time that we really suspect somebody based on a rumor is that it's a rumor that persists. It's a rumor that that doesn't sort of dissipate of its own, even if it later comes back. Within that day and a half, and it's a fellow who there's no reason to ascribe to him that people are trying to get him angry, or people have a particular anger at him or hatred for him, and it's also not somebody who has known enemies in the town who might be starting that rumor just to hurt him, which means, by the way, that the original statement had most of its sting taken out of it, but there is still a depth to that, with that notion that if there are rumors circling around of a certain particular person about a particular kind of behavior, ultimately, some part of it's got to be true. Maybe he didn't do all of it, but did some of it. Maybe he didn't do all of it, but he's certainly in the parsha of doing it. And therefore, there is that tremendous bit of wisdom in understanding the relationship between rumors and reality. Everybody should have a wonderful day. And if it's Hashem, tomorrow, we will continue from this point.